Driver Breen stared at him, dumbfounded.
Well, perhaps not need, but we can surely profit from an arrangement. Consider, you have goods, and I have the trade network for such goods. What does the fishmonger pay you? A few pieces of copper? A silver or two, perhaps, for an oyster? Why, of course she would pay you so, because there is competition here for the things. Your boy is not the only diver, although, admittedly, he seems to be quite good at it. But there are places, not so far from here, where an oyster from the depths of the Sea of Fallen Stars could bring a gold piece. And I know how to get to those places,
Pericolo explained.
You cannot do it without me, of course, but so it seems, neither can I without you.
What do you mean?
He means that your life's about to get a bunch easier, from what I'm hearing,
Shasta Furfoot dared to say.
Indeed, my lovely, Pericolo agreed,
and to Ivorbreen he added,
do we understand each other?
I give you the oysters my boy brings in,
Ivorbreen asked more than stated, for he did not really understand what was transpiring here. Pericolo nodded.
And I reward you, he said.
And he tapped his cane on the bar to make sure he had Shasta's attention.
My friend here eats and drinks and resides here for free this day forward.
The halfling woman's face dropped in a protest she dared not utter aloud, but Pericolo took care of it anyway by adding,
I will pay all his bills henceforth.
He motioned to his glass, which Shasta moved quickly to fill. Pericolo stopped her short, though, with a thrust of his cane.
But just for Ivorbreen, yes?
He warned in no uncertain terms. The blood drained from Shasta Furfoot's face. Pericolo moved his cane aside, and she poured the brandy into his glass. Pericolo pushed it with his cane in front of Ivorbreen. With a tip of his fine beret, Pericolo Topolino took his leave.
Seems to be Ivorbreen Paraffin's luckiest day, eh?
Shasta Furfoot said as Ivorbreen stared over his shoulder at the departing grandfather. Ivorbreen, who had lived day to day, often eating dead rats he found in the alleyways, even licking puddles of others' spilled liquor, couldn't really argue. But a nagging fear inside of him put a lump in his throat.
Generous,
Dinala remarked to Pericolo, the two of them walking down the street from the tavern where Pericolo had left Ivorbreen. Dinala Topolino was the grandfather's actual granddaughter, a promising young thief, and more importantly, a well-heeled socialite. Her primary function in Pericolo's organization was to keep abreast of the whispers behind the power structures in Delphuntle, something the brassy and lively 17-year-old halfling girl truly enjoyed, and at which she truly excelled.
He has something I want,
the grandfather answered.
Indeed, but you could have garnered that favor much more cheaply, don't you think? How much can a halfling drink, or eat? And he'll not eat much if he's drinking excessively, eh?
Dinala stopped, and after a couple of steps, Pericolo, too, paused in his walk and turned to regard her smiling face, a perfectly smug expression.
And sleep?
She said knowingly.
Not just the drink he craves, but lodging as well? No, grandfather. This is about more than Spider. You feel sympathy for Ivorbreen.
Pericolo considered the words for a moment, then scoffed.
He disgusts me. He is weak. There is no place among our people for such reinforcement of prejudice. Generous,
Dinala said in a leading voice.
To Spider, then,
Pericolo agreed, and he started on his way once more.
For I have surely hastened the death of his worthless father.
In all his life, even his previous life, Regis had never felt freer than in these very moments. He slithered around, almost weightless, enjoying the crags and valleys of the uneven sea floor. He didn't even bother to keep his guide rope, tied to a buoy above, in sight, because he knew that he would have no problem in slowly ascending from the watery depths. So entranced was Regis by the multitude of small fish swimming around, the eels ducking backward into their caves, and the waving seagrasses, that he had barely begun to fill his pouch with the valued oysters. It didn't matter, he knew. In all of Delphuntal, there weren't five others who could get down to this depth, with nearly 50 feet of water between him and the air, and none that he knew of could stay down here for any length of time, or come back down after a break. The others, of course, had to rely on magical spells with typically short durations, whereas Regis, for whatever reason, had little trouble swimming along the depths and moving around for a long, long while, or in coming right back down after a quick breath up above. Even worse for those venturing to these depths under magical spells, they had to take great care in ascending, or be racked with sometimes fatal pains. But Regis didn't have that problem. He could swim right up with few ill effects. Even if he lingered too long, he never felt that drowning sensation, the terror of an immediate need to gulp air. Never. No, as he considered his time underwater, it seemed more like he was getting some air from the water. He couldn't actually breathe down here as well as up above, of course. But he could still draw some tiny sustenance, enough to keep him alive, if not entirely comfortable. There were dangers under the dark waters of the Sea of Fallen Stars, but he knew them well enough and knew how to avoid them. His fears could not outweigh his sense of adventure, the feeling of freedom, and the extraordinary beauty all around him. He had come out early this morning, giving himself all day to swim and enjoy, and to fill his pouch, for indeed, Ivor Breen was not forgiving when Regis returned without a full pouch. The sun was low in the sky when he walked the broken cobblestone ways of Delphuntal's lower section. Ivor Breen was not at home in the alley with the lean-to, but that didn't much bother Regis, for he was fairly certain of where he might find his poor, afflicted father. Shasta Furfoot smiled widely at the young halfling when he entered her establishment, and Regis returned the look, but only briefly, his expression shifting to one of concern as he glanced around the common room.
"He's upstairs in his room," Shasta remarked. "His room? Whose? Your daw?" "His room?"
Regis asked, puzzled, for he and his father lived in an alley with only a few boards leaned up against a wall to call their home.
"Aye. And your own, too, I'm guessing."
Shasta nodded toward the staircase.